The question was asked, what motivation can one have when one views a world that's dark, when one views a world that's filled with suffering, and one thinks about bringing children to the world and then asks oneself, for what? Wait a second. If the world to come is so beyond me, I don't begin to understand it. So what am I doing here? And I think the question at its root is a question about, what's my job in this world? What am I doing here? Meaning I can look at it in a global way and say, keep Torah and do mitzvos, but I want to understand a little bit better. What am I doing here? Right? That's in a nutshell. So I want to borrow from many different concepts and try to put this trillion together for a direction. Okay? And we're going to have to touch on a few different points. We're going to try to touch on the idea of the job of a human being in the world, the job of a Jew in the world, the job of the Jewish people in the world, the idea of the potential of good versus darkness, the idea of Paro and the serpent from the beginning. What did the serpent really do from the beginning, and what is our challenge ever since then, where Paro represents, so to speak, the reincarnation of the serpent. That's why Paro is the snake, right? Paro calls himself the snake. And in the Torah, he is referred to as the snake, right? That's the idea of the staff turning into a snake and Moshe taking it and it turns back into a staff. That until now, Paro thought he had a mind of his own. He could do whatever he wants. He could hurt the Jews as he pleases. He's like a snake. He can move. He could do everything. And Moshe grabs his tail, and suddenly instead of biting Moshe, it turns into a staff. And Moshe is reminding him, you are but a staff in God's hand. God wanted this to play itself out this way, and that's why it played itself out this way. And now God's saying, it's over, it's over. Now you're going to be reminded, you were nothing but a stick. Yes, you hit the Jewish people, but it wasn't you who were doing it. You're not that snake that has a mind of its own. You're a stick. And that's why that message was so potent. And that's why Moshe expected Paro to stop and have second thoughts just from seeing that miracle. And that's why time and again Moshe brings the staff when he talks to Paro. Because the staff has a tremendous message. So let's begin. And through our journey, I hope we will answer the question from different angles. There is one of the most ancient prayers that we have. We call it Aleinu. Aleinu Shabach L'Adonako. We should give thanks. Shelo Asanu K'goyei HaRatzot. He didn't make us like the nations of the land. Shelo Samcha K'enu K'hem. He didn't give us their portion. He didn't give us their lot. They're pagans. V'anachnu koreim u'mishtachavim u'modim nifnemech machay amnachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have this great fortune that we bow. We are before Hashem. That He is. And then we're going to describe His greatness. Al kein nekave lecha Hashem Elokeinu. Al kein doesn't go back on aleinu. Al-Kain goes back, is going forward. Therefore, we have hope. We hope for you. Why? Ki ha-malchut shel chahi. Goes on the last verse of Al-Kain. But our hope is for what? We say, Al-Kain nekave lecha Hashem Elokeinu, lirot meira b'tiferet uzecha, le'avir gilulim min ha'aretz ve'alelim ko'ot ikaritun, and now a very pivotal line, letaken olam b'malchut shaddai. We look, we have hope. What we're looking forward to is letaken olam, to see a fixed world, b'malchut shaddai, with the kingdom of the omnipotent. Okay? So we're looking, where are we headed towards? Where are we looking towards? Concept of tikkun olam. Who compiled Al Kein Nekaveh Lecha? So that was in the days of Yoshua. Yeshua composed Aleinu, and either Yeshua or Achan composed Al-Kein Nekaveh Lecha. So this prayer goes back almost to Moshe Rabbeinu. This prayer is more ancient than almost any other prayer we have. It's quite possibly the most ancient prayer we have. It says when the man fell down, so Moshe compiled the first blessing of benching. When we entered Israel, so Joshua compiled Nodelecha. So okay, so but Aleinu is either the most ancient or second most ancient prayer we have. So we're hoping for Letakein Olam B'Malchut Shaddai. Now, how do you get there? What does that mean? I'm trying to remember. I just saw a quote. I just saw a quote this week. There was a person whose job it was to be in the UN. And when he went there, so he first went, a Jew. I don't remember what his role was, who he was representing there. He went to the Rebbe of Chabad. And he said to the Rebbe of Chabad, why should I be there? The nations spend all their time bashing Israel. What am I doing there? And the Rebbe of Chabad told him one idea. He said, you light a light of truth and good in the world. And when you light a little light, if everything all around you is very, very dark, so then from a great distance, everyone will see that light. Don't focus on how big your light is, and don't focus on how much darkness there is all around you. But realize that light attracts people. You have to be a light. The fact that everything around you is dark, that only means that more people, and for a greater distance, your light will be visible. Don't let it extinguish your light. No, on the contrary, it should encourage you. We live in a world where sometimes, yes, a person can be discouraged. And especially you guys. I hear this all the time. People come to Israel with great idealism. We had a guy who came here. He told me he grew up in Germany. He wasn't even Jewish. He did gear here. I don't know if he ended up doing gear. He didn't do gear by us, but he might have ended up doing gear here. I don't know where he ended up. But he told me in Germany he used to fight neo-Nazis. He used to mamash beat up anyone who would do anything that would hurt a Jew, even though he wasn't Jewish. He would fight for the cause. And then he'd come to Israel, and he'd be in a bar, and people would start fights. And he'd look at them and say, Jews fighting? How could you guys do this? I come from Germany. We fight. You guys, how could Jews fight? He couldn't understand it. How one Jew could lift a hand at another Jew. How could such a thing be? So people sometimes come to Israel with tremendous idealism and tremendous light, and then they're very, very discouraged by what they see. How could it be that Jews treat one another like this? Stop. Pause. We'll come back to this story. Let's go back to what we said to the serpent, to the beginning of creation. Man is created, and he's told, you can eat from all the fruits. Think about it, all the fruits that are out there you can have, except one. What's the serpent do? He comes and says, gee, I hear you guys can't have anything out here. What do you mean I can't have anything? The best fruit that he kept for himself. He lets you have all the regular stuff. There's one really good one, and that one he's not giving you. Suddenly everything they have doesn't taste so good. Because the real good one they can't have, right? You've been there, you know that, right? What?
All the time.
All the time, right? Sure. We had a student here who had, I think, over 100 offers for marriage. But there was one girl who he once wanted to marry, and then he decided he doesn't want to marry her. He turned his back on her. And then he changed his mind when he was here. He left her, he came to Israel. Then he decided he wanted to marry her, and she said no. So even though he had, if I remember correctly, he had over 100 girls that wanted to marry him over the course of the years, he was never able to get married because there was that one girl that he wanted that wouldn't marry him. No. What's going on here? Yeah, we could look at the world that way. And that's what the serpent in every person's life tries to get us to do. You look at a big picture and say, okay, but I don't have that. You have everything else, but I don't have that. And I want that. But you have every tree in the garden, but there's one I don't have, so everything else doesn't taste good. I know I have everything else, but it's not good. And we're all that way. We have so much blessings in our lives, in a minute. We have so many blessings in our lives, but we forget them. And we look at the one thing that isn't going good in our life, and suddenly it outweighs everything. You talk to the average person that's depressed. What's depressing him? The average person that's depressed is not going to tell you a long list of problems. Oh, they might. But really, they have one problem that's really bothering them. They're letting that envelop their life. And like the Rav Nachman said, the famous mashal, he says, you can take a coin and put it near your eye and it'll block out the sun. Right? So the small coin can block out the big sun. Yeah, if you put it near your eye, you can't see the big sun. So we have that choice in our lives, and we make that choice. That's the famous story. Aviel, you'll help me. Who was that professor whose wife had a little pimple on her nose? You know what I'm talking about? And he made this great concoction to... And he's working and working, and she's the perfect wife, and everything's great but that pimple. So he becomes so focused on that one pimple, he's got to get rid of that. And he's working day and night until he comes up with a concoction, and he calls her in, and he says, my wife, you are the greatest wife a person can dream of, but you know you have one little pimple, and I just figured out after all these years the concoction. He's worked on it a long time to cure that one little pimple that keeps coming back on your nose. And she says, okay, if you say so. He gives her the potion. She drinks the potion, and he's standing there with his big glasses and his hair flying everywhere, and he's looking at her. And as he's watching, the pimple gets smaller and smaller, and he's dancing from joy. And he's watching, and he says, look, now you're going to be perfect. It's amazing. And he's watching, and then it disappears. And then he tries talking to her, and she doesn't answer. And he touches her, and she falls to the ground. And he checks her pulse, and she's dead. And that's the end of the story. you know what I'm talking about?
I'm sorry, disappointed.
It's a classic. This is one of the short stories we had to read in high school. This is one of the classics. Oh, I forgot the name. So, but what's the moral? What's the theme? We sometimes strive for perfection. We have everything but one little thing. And then we focus on that one little thing, and it blots out everything else. And then we focus on that so much that we let it blot out everything else, like he did. He lost everything for that one little thing. That's what
you were going to say. She wouldn't be interested in him anymore.
So that's what happened with the Nachash, and that's what happened with Adam and Chava. The Nachash says, "Af ki amar Elokim lo tochlu mikol etz hagan." I hear you guys can't eat anything around here. Really? No, he didn't hear, but he wanted them to view it that way. Now, we face that challenge, and we face that challenge repeatedly, and the question is, where do we look? We have a certain tendency as a Jewish people. We have a stiff neck and a soft heart. Very interesting. We're stiff-necked. We're people that go try fighting with a Jew, go try to convince him. You know, there's a famous story about two kids who are fighting over a ball. So there's a crowd of kids around them, and the two kids, this one gives him a left, and that one gives him a right. He's bleeding, and he's bleeding, and he broke his nose, and he broke his arm, and they're finally, one gives up, and he says, Uncle, I give up. You take the ball. So the victor goes and holds the ball up, and all the kids all around are clapping for him. And then he walks over to the guy on the floor, gives him a hand to pick him up, and gives him the ball. So you look at it and you say, what a dope. You broke one another's arms. You broke his nose. And now you're giving him the ball? Yeah. That could really happen. Why? Because it's stiff-necked. I'm not going to give in. But after I won, I got a soft heart. I could give him the ball. I mean, you could see this. I've seen this on the streets here in Israel. Where two people, one cuts the other one off, and the other one chases after him, and he stops him, and I'm going to show you. And he walks over, and he bashes his mirror, and he says, I'm going to show you. And then they spend a good half hour yelling at one another. And when they're done, one invites the other one over for a beer, and they get a, you know, I don't know if you guys ever saw it. I've seen this with my own eyes, you know. First, I got to show you. And after I've shown you, now, okay, now we're all Jews. You guys never saw this? You've seen it, right? Oh no, I was on a bus more than once.
Same thing,
right?
Cursing each other, gives the guy a tip, and everything. Down a tatadik.
Sure. So we have a stiff neck and a soft heart, and Paro is the other way around. Initially, he doesn't want to enslave the Jews. and the Egyptians demote him, and he gives in. See, a Jew doesn't give in. He fights. But afterwards, he's willing to, you know, it's a different story afterwards. Paro gives in. And then he's got a hard heart. You can't convince him afterwards. The Jews are going to suffer, and I'm not going to give in. And it doesn't matter what he's shown, he's not willing to see different. This deserves a long series. It doesn't deserve one class. But this is an asset we were given. Meaning, there's an element where you're going to question and ask and argue. And that's why, you know, a Jew always answers a question with a question. Why do you say this way? I could say that way. Maybe it should be this way. Maybe it should be that way. But at the root of it all, as tough as he's going to be and as much as he's going to be a nudnik, he's got that soft heart that says, I want to be convinced. I want you to show me. Now, we have a potential to view different sides of the same coin. And it's not that one is true and one isn't true. It's a question of perspective. You can't say it's not true. There are people who beat one another up and cut one another off and do all kinds of things that are wrong. The question is, what do I look at? So question number one is, what am I going to see? And that's a question of me, not what's going on externally to me. Externally to me, both are true. It's true that there's good, and it's true that there's bad, and it's a question of where am I? It's not a question of where is the metziut, it's a question of where am I? It's a question of, am I going to look at all the trees I can eat, or am I going to look at the one tree which I cannot eat from? So that's question number one. But then there's question number two. And that brings us back to L'taken Olam B'Malchut Shaddai. And that is my potential to affect the world. One of the gifts that we were given is the capacity to change. Not only to change ourselves, but also to change the world around us. When we look at the Torah, when we look at history, one of the lessons we're supposed to learn is about the great responsibility we were given with that capacity to change. So there's the famous Dvar Torah that Rav Elchanan HaZachavitz Zatzal told me, just parenthetically. He and his wife were both mutilated by the Nazis. They couldn't have any kids. And coming off of what the Chafetz Chaim writes, that people who can't have kids, so their good deeds are their lineage. That's what they leave behind after them, based on the verse in Isaiah. So they spent their life focused on doing kindness with other people. I rented a room from them, and I had the good fortune of living in their house for a year. So he once told me, I'd go up to them every Friday night or Shabbos morning. I'd eat one meal on Shabbos by them. They didn't have kids of their own, so I'd eat by them. So he once told me that as a kid in Europe, they told them the following Dvar Torah. This is what he heard as a child in Cheder. I've said this numerous times. Some of you have heard it already. It's worth repeating. David HaMelech is being attacked by King Saul. And everyone's talking badly about him. And they're ready to kill him. And they keep chasing after him, ready to kill him. And David HaMelech laments and says, Eino seitov ein gam echad. There's no one there who's doing good. There isn't even one. Why does he say there isn't even one? So you see a herd of cattle. See 20 oxen. Each one is stronger than the shepherd. Each one could take apart the shepherd. And yet the shepherd could lead 20 oxen and they're all following in the herd. Why? Why doesn't any one of them take him down and do what they want? No, they all follow. In our history, we are repeatedly taught that there was one person who was the catalyst for change. Ish Yehudi Ayab Shushan Abira. One person, one Jew. But he stood up and said, don't go to Ahasuerus' party. And he stood up and told Esther, this is how you should do things. And in the end, that Ish Yehudi saved the day, saved all Jewish people. All of the oral tradition was going to be lost. Along comes Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, sets up an academy, teaches, sets up rabbis, and says, okay, Eis La'asos L'Hashem. We have to ensure that the oral tradition won't be lost. One person said, we have to go out to Vespasian and tell him that the rabbis aren't against him. That it's the people who aren't listening to the rabbis that are making civil war. We aren't for it. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai feigns his death, and he goes out and he greets Vespasian, and he makes peace, and he saves the day. And thanks to him, we have the oral tradition. Each time, at each juncture, what?
The same emperor destroyed the temple.
That's true, but he would have destroyed everything else too.
That was a little controversial. Some people, I agree with you, but some people say he should have. Jerusalem, but
whatever he did, he was one. Yeah, he saved. You're saying he could have saved more. He did save.
Right.
Whether he could have saved more or not, fine. That's not our job to judge. At any rate, David the Melech was complaining. Eino seitov. There's none who do good. Ein gam echad. There isn't even that one. Because in Jewish history, we always see you need one. And our job is always to view ourselves as the one who could be that one. We got to do it right. We have to work. But we have to know that our job is to make light. And when we make light, then there's no limit to how much light we can make. And it could shine for the world and it could shine for generations. The herd of cattle, no one thinks, hey, I could take him down. Everyone thinks, he's gone, I'm going. That's a herd approach. I got to do what everyone else is doing, so I'm doing it. And that's why one shepherd could guide 20 cattle that are stronger than him. Because none of them stopped to think, what should I be doing? But we're not supposed to be like cattle. So that's what he was taught as a child. As a child, this was a Dvar Torah that his Rebbe told him that he told me. When we look at the world, so we have choice number one. Are we going to see what's good? Or are we going to look at what's not good? And sometimes there's a lot that's not good. The greater a person is, the more he can see what's right. And that's why the Rebbe of Klosenberg, even though his 11 children and his wife were murdered before his eyes, he was able to be a source of inspiration in Auschwitz. I started this project, which unfortunately I don't have time to continue, of interviewing Holocaust survivors and asking them how they were even able to consider, what gave them that fortitude to continue being observant Jews after the Holocaust. I have no question on those who didn't. I have a question on those who did. And I got different answers from different people. It's a generation that we should cherish. We're fortunate to have a few of them still with us. The greater a person is, the greater the light that's within him, the more he can shine, even in the face of great adversity. Even in the middle of Auschwitz, as we've discussed the speech of the Eish Kodesh, or the Rebbe of Klosenberg. And our job is to know that there's a light beyond the tunnel. I'm not talking about the end of the tunnel. Life doesn't end in the tunnel. Part of what the world tries to do is to make us think it's going to be over. You know, they didn't copy down Rav Soloveitchik's shiurim because they were convinced there would be no next generation. When Rav Soloveitchik taught in the 40s, his students were so convinced that Judaism is finished that they saw no reason. Who were they writing down his chidushim for? So for the first decade, no one wrote down. They didn't write down what he taught. When Ben-Gurion agreed to the draft agreement with the religious Jews, Ben-Gurion was convinced, what do I care? In a decade or two, there won't be any religious Jews. So I could let them not draft. What do I care if they learn in their yeshivas? It's only a matter of time. There'll be no future. Where did he dream that we'd look like we look now?
Which Soloveitchik we talking about? Which Rav Soloveitchik?
Rav Yoshe Ben.
Yeah.
In the first years, they didn't. Rav Herschel Schechter recorded what he said once in a shir, that he asked the older guys, why don't you guys have any records from the earlier years? Why don't you have a shirim? And they said, we didn't think, who are we writing it for? No one envisioned there'd be a future. But our job is to envision. Our job is to learn from that. So beforehand, we were discussing our job to see what's good. Now we're saying, even when everything around seems bad, we have to know it's temporary. And if I could be that light, if you can be that light, if every one of us stops and says, my job is to be that light, then we are the future. The future is those who are willing to see beyond the darkness and not to be subdued by the darkness. And that's a large job. That's the job of Am Yisrael in the world. That's why Am Yisrael was, what does it mean to be a light onto the nations? V'yore'u mimeko. V'yore'u kol ha'me'oretz kishem Hashem nikra alecha. The nations of the world will see that God's name is on you, v'yore'u, and then they will become God-fearing people, mimeka. From you they will learn how to be God-fearing people. But we have a job. A God-fearing person doesn't spend life fearing the Nazi, or as Frankl said, right? He has to be able to pull himself out of the situation he's in and look at it from a bird's eye view, look at it externally. A God-fearing person says, I have one thing to fear. You have down the hall, two doors down from us. You know the story of Yosel Mendelovich, right? Then he wasn't Rabbi Yosel Mendelovich, right? He was in jail. They gave him clothing that were wider so that he wouldn't have any protection from the elements. The wind would blow right through the clothing. And in jail, he cut out a piece of the garment and made a yarmulke. So the head of the jail calls him into the office and says, well, Yosel, what's on your head? So he says, a piece of cloth that says, I fear God. So the head of the jail says, well, you're going to take off that piece of cloth. And Yosla said, no, I won't. And he said, well, I'm pulling out my revolver. And he cocks his revolver and said, I'm going to count till 10. And by the time I finish counting till 10, either the yarmulke's off your head or I'm pulling the trigger. Yosla said, start counting because it's not coming off my head. So he counts till 10. And he doesn't budge. And the head of the jail starts crying. He puts down his gun and said, you're stronger than me, but how'd you know? So he said, because I fear one. And I wear this to show I fear him. You fear many. Yeah, I fear him. I know I'm doing what's right. But you, if you pull the trigger, and in the Kremlin they're not happy with you, they'll pull the trigger on you. So you can't pull the trigger on me. Not a story about someone who lived 500 years ago. He teaches here down the hall. Rabbi Mendelovich from the Russian department. I said, there you have people who decided to be shining lights. And they said, everything around me is darkness, but I'm not going to have my light shut by them. Am Yisrael has a job. The Yore'u Mimeka. From you they'll learn. That's what we brought from Aleinu. The Taken Olam B'malchut Shaddai. And a person doesn't give up. A person says, I'm going to make my steps. I'm going to make my advancements. I don't have to conquer the world today. I have to advance today. I've advanced today, I've accomplished today. Where will it get to? That's his job. I can make my baby steps. And as I advance, Bezrat Hashem, I'm moving the whole world forward with me. We don't always see the products. There's the famous story about the mother whose son was in the Russian army. She had a tehillim at home. She'd weep as she'd pray for her son. And every week she'd go through the whole tehillim weeping over the book. And her son was from the Russians would purposely take kids in at 5 years old, 6 years old, and bring them up in the army to ensure that they knew nothing about Judaism. And then at 35 years old, they'd send them home. So the kid comes to his mother's little hut. He's 35. His mother's already dead. They tell him, go pick up whatever she has left. He walks in. He sees nothing. A bare house, a table, a chair, and a book. So he looks around the house. He can't find anything to take. What's he supposed to take? So he goes to look at the book. He can't read any of the words. So he's about to leave the room, and he looks at the book, and he sees all the pages are shriveled. And he understands that this book, the pages are shriveled because they're filled with tears. So he asks himself, what could this book be? That it's such a moving classic. Who knows what? It moved my mother so much. You know, she cried on each page. So he goes and he asks one of the neighbors, and they explain to him, it's a tehillim. This is what your mother did. Every day she'd weep about you. So they moved him. He came back to Israel, learned what Judaism is all about, built a good Jewish family. She never saw where her prayer would lead. She didn't see him coming back at the end of her days. In heaven she saw it. But we don't always see the product of the steps we take. We have to work within the system. We know, A, perspective, there's a lot of good, let me see the good. B, my job is to be a shining, a source of light, a source of good. And Be'ezrat Hashem, my light will shine and create other lights and ignite others.